Right now, we are going to open up. We are not in a position to adopt the agenda yet because we need our quorum, but we will be doing that shortly. But in the opening, I would like to welcome back Zakwanda Madalani, our economist, research, etc. here. And I know she would have spent her study leave completing her, what certificate is it now, or degree? Her master's. So we're very pleased to welcome her back. Thank you very much. And we also now have our quorum. Am I correct? Yes. Okay, that's a big help. Just to look at the, let's adopt the agenda and then we'll take the apologies. Yeah, someone, yes, thank you. Honourable Vuyani.
Then, sir, I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Honourable Mantash.
Chair, I stand to second Honourable Vuyani.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mantash. Now we can just do the apologies here. We have a couple of people on party business, Honourable Alberts, Honourable McLaubel, and then we have compassionate leave, Honourable Tlangwini, study leave, Honourable Williams. Oh yeah, and the Honourable Esterhazen is in attendance in the energy, I'm assuming. Also, when it comes to the Honourable Tiako, although she's here with us right now, she will be leaving shortly to attend labour. Is that correct, Honourable Tiako? I am not sure where our whip is, but I think that we are ascertaining that. Yes. There may be strategy, but we were not invited, so that's why I say I'm not sure. Thank you. Before we move on to the formal part of the agenda, as part of the opening, I want to just clarify and ascertain, have we begun to draft that letter crafted for the sugar, Mr. Hermans? Mm-hmm. So you'll do it today, yes. So that we can process that on. Fine. Now, you'll see from our agenda here that we have the existing regional trade agreements, the negotiations, and the implementation. And in welcoming the people from DTI, one would like to welcome the Deputy Director General, the DDG of ITED, Ms. Nklambu, sorry, Goliswa, Galelwa Nklambu Peter. Galelwa, I've never called you Goliswa before, I'm not sure where my memory went, but you are here with us today and we are very pleased because I'm not sure if you will, you know, if we are going to be dealing with this issue again this term before we rise. I was checking with Mr. Hermans. We're not, are we? We may deal with the trade and Brexit, right. But just in case we don't, we would like to acknowledge our appreciation for the support that you have given the committee, because we're rising, as you know, on March the 20th, so I hope we do see you again before we rise. Thank you so much, DDG. And if we could break after the regional trade agreements and we could have our questions and comments at that particular point. All right, thank you. Over to yourself, DDG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. and everyone in attendance. Thank you very much, Chair, for also your support in the work of the division. The trade arena is going through significant challenges, and of course we've been working very closely with the committee in preparation for MC11 when we went to Argentina, and again as we go to MC12 in Kazakhstan, once Parliament rises, we will work very closely with the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. In terms of the outline of the presentation, I will cover the policy context and the trade policy and strategy framework. I will touch on our approach to regional economic integration, the FCFTA, SADC, SACU, and the tripartite free trade agreement. And then I will pause there so that we go to the other regions. In terms of the policy context, Honorable Chair, our approach is to ensure that we support national development, accelerate growth along a path that will generate sustainable development, decent jobs, but also inclusive growth. And we ensure that whatever we do on trade must support the National Development Plan as well as the New Growth Path. Trade is an instrument of industrial policy. So the National Industrial Policy Framework and the Industrial Policy Action Plan are central components of our strategy so that we ensure that through trade we can support and encourage value addition, labor absorbing industrial production as well. We do have a strategy that was approved by Cabinet in 2012 and it continues to guide our work, and that is the Trade Policy and Strategic Framework. And what it does is to propose and advocate for a strategic approach to tariff reform. As I said, trade policy is an instrument of industrial policy. So what the TPSF does is to call for a developmental tariff setting and a strategic approach to tariff reform, which means that we follow an evidence-based, case-by-case approach to changes in tariffs. There's no a priori position. Other countries will, for example, have a tariff band where, in the case of inputs, they will have a lower tariff, intermediate, marginal tariff, and then higher tariff on final products. We've opted not to do that as South Africa. What we do is to, informed by the sector strategies that are developed by our Industrial Development Division, ITEC will then undertake the investigations based on applications from industry on the level of tariff that we need for a specific tariff line. So it is based, as we said, on an evidence-based approach, and it's a case-by-case approach to where the level of tariffs should be. So there's a vital role of ITEC in the work that we do. But as a broad policy approach, the aim is to reduce tariffs on mature upstream input industries so that we lower the input costs for our downstream labor creating manufacturing. And then we'll raise tariffs on downstream industries where there's employment as well as value addition potential. This ensures that our trade policy therefore supports the overall objectives of South Africa to industrialize but also to create jobs. And we do all of this taking into account the obligations that we have in our trade agreements but also in the World Trade Organization. So broadly, the trade strategy priorities are to promote African development, industrialization and integration. This is taking into account the fact that if you look at the continent, we still are following a commodity-driven path. So commodities form a major part of our exports, which is not sustainable because we export primary and raw products and then import finished products. So the aim of our trade strategy, both within the country but also the continent, is to ensure that we are able to promote value addition and create the policy space for us to industrialize. In the continent, we pursue a development integration approach, and this informs our participation in the Southern Africa Customs Union, in the Southern Africa Development Community, in the Tripartite Free Trade Agreement, as well as the African Continental FTA. Broadly, the development integration approach promotes or is based on three pillars: market integration, industrialization, as well as infrastructure development. We also aim as a country to maintain our trade and investment relations with industrialized economies. They are the major players, and they offer a lot of market access opportunities for our products, and we have established relations with a number of these industrial economies, but also they are our biggest investors in terms of promoting our own agenda internally. We are also working to build industrial complementarities with the countries of the South, including the BRICS countries. And the aim here, and also with the industrial economies, is to change the structure of our trade. We want to move up the value chain and be able to export more value-added products. In the WTO, the aim is to ensure that there's a development outcome that takes into account the differences in levels of development in the countries, but also ensures that we are able to deliver on the Doha Development Agenda. In terms of regional integration, as I've said, Honorable Chair, we follow the Development Integration Agenda that is based on market integration, industrial development, and infrastructure development. And this continues to inform our approach in everything that we do in all the regional integration and regional economic communities that we participate in. I will now move to the African Continental FTA, Honorable Chair. In terms of the AFCFTA, this was launched in June 2005 in Johannesburg, South Africa. And what the summit agreed to do is to approach this ambitious agenda in two phases. Phase one includes the protocol on trade in goods, the protocol on trade in services, and phase two will include cooperation framework on competition, intellectual property, as well as an approach, continental approach on investment. The FCFTA was launched in March 2018. What it does is to create a single market for goods and services in the continent. It assists us to expedite integration. It boosts intra-Africa trade and investment. It harmonizes the trade regimes in that we will have a single rule book for trade and investment in the continent through progressive liberalization of tariffs, and also the aim is to address barriers to both trade in goods as well as services. It's based on the development integration agenda, and it does recognize the differences in levels of development because we have, as a continent, the biggest number of least developed countries. So as we approach this agenda, we need to be sensitive to the needs of the least developed countries. Hence, there is recognition that we'll have to move at different speeds. So variable geometry is a core component and principle that underpins the establishment of the CFTA. It also has special and differential treatment, and it does give flexibilities to countries given their special needs. What it does is to also preserve the acquis that we already have at the regional economic community level. So what obtains in SADC will be preserved. The integration that we have in SACU will also be preserved. So it's the same approach that we followed when we were establishing the tripartite free trade agreement, in that the tariff negotiations will be among countries that currently do not have trade arrangements amongst themselves. So for us as South Africa, we already have trade agreement in SACU with Botswana, Lesotho, Eswatini, and Namibia. So we won't negotiate with those countries, and the same obtains with the countries that we have arrangements with in SADC. And with the tripartite, we are currently finalizing negotiations with the EAC, so we won't negotiate with the EAC and Egypt. But under the continental framework, we'll then negotiate with mainly the North and the Western countries. Reciprocity is also a fundamental principle that underpins the AFCFTA. If you look at the potential that the AFCFTA has in terms of boosting intra-Africa trade, UNECA has undertaken a study, and the study indicates that it can unlock intra-Africa trade to grow by 52% by 2020. Currently, our share of global trade is quite low as a continent, accounting for about 3% of global trade. So there's potential that once we are able to boost intra-Africa trade, we'd also be able to effectively integrate into the global markets as well, and we'll be able to grow our share of global trade. If you look at the trend, in 2000, intra-Africa trade was only at 9%. And 2015, it was estimated to be around 18%. So there has been significant growth in intra-Africa trade. However, it's still very low by global standards, because if you look at intra-Asia trade, it stands at 52%, intra-North American trade at 50%, and intra-EU trade at 70%. So we still have a long way to go, and the AfCFTA will assist us to be able to boost intra-Africa trade. In terms of trade in the continent, South Africa is the largest contributor, accounting for about 24.9%, and our total trade in 2017 with the rest of the continent was approximately 478.8 billion rand. And it's also diversified. We export mineral products, machinery, chemicals, iron and steel products, which account for about 50% of our total exports. The key export destinations for South African products are Botswana, Namibia, Mozambique, Zambia and Zimbabwe. And you can see these are all countries that are members of the Southern Africa Development Community. So majority of our exports are still destined for SADC. So what the AfCFTA will do is to open up market access opportunities beyond SADC. If you look at the legal architecture of the AfCFTA, there's an overall or overarching agreement that establishes the AfCFTA. It is a framework agreement that indicates the protocols that are there that are attached to the agreement, but also establishes a secretariat that will be responsible for the implementation of the AfCFTA. And the discussions around the secretariat are that we need to have a technical secretariat that will ensure efficient implementation and also monitor the implementation of obligations by members, for those members that have taken commitments under the AfCFTA. It also has a protocol on trade in goods, which will include a schedule for tariff concessions. It will include rules of origin, which are the conditions that a product must meet for it to receive a preference. It also includes customs cooperation and mutual assistance, and this is going to be a critical component of the AfCFTA, because if you don't deal with trade facilitation issues, and then we are going to constrain the movement of goods and services. So the customs cooperation and mutual assistance annex in the agreement is quite critical. So we also have the trade facilitation. We also have provisions around how we are going to deal with non-tariff barriers, because as you may be aware, Chair, as you remove tariffs, what happens is that members end up increasing or putting more non-tariff barriers. So it's important that we have a mechanism on how we are going to deal with non-tariff barriers. Then there's also cooperation around technical barriers to trade. Here, these are regulations that we put in place as members for us to be able to say what standards should a specific product meet for it to ensure that the trade facilitates quality products or trade in quality products. And this relates mainly to industrial products, but specifically for agricultural products, we have sanitary and phytosanitary measures, which are the measures or standards that a product, an agricultural product, must meet for it to enter a specific market. So what these two instruments do is to allow the members policy space to be able to regulate their own market, so we are not removing the need for a product to meet specific standards. And what we are also moving towards is that there must be compliance to international standards, because through the FCFTA, we don't only want to trade amongst ourselves, but we also want to use this as a mechanism for us to be able to trade with the world as well. So international standards are quite critical. So it has a number of mechanisms, including capacity building, to also enhance capacity in the member states that currently struggle to regulate their own market and meet the necessary standards for us to cooperate amongst ourselves to ensure that we increase the standards for products in the continent. It also talks to the transit and what will obtain as the goods move across different jurisdictions, but also makes provision for trade remedies. The trade remedies are measures that you can put in place if there are negative effects out of a trade agreement. These include anti-dumping measures. If, for example, a particular company is selling a product in a specific market at a lower price than it sells in its domestic market, then you can put in place the anti-dumping measures to deal with that, because that is unfair trade. So what we want to promote is fairness in trade, and if there are unfair trade practices, then the agreement has mechanisms that are built within it to deal with those unfair practices. And also, if there's a sudden surge in imports, you can put in place safeguard measures. So the number of remedies that are available within the agreement to deal and to promote fairness in trade. Then there's a protocol on trade in services, which includes provisions on general obligations and disciplines that must obtain, but also includes progressive liberalization of services. Most of the continental economies are exporters or producers of services, and services play a critical role in the domestic economies of many of our economies. So the fact that we are now also looking at liberalization of trade in services is an important development. And also services are critical for industrial development. So this also talks to the development integration agenda that we said underpins our approach in the continent. We also have a protocol on rules and procedures for the settlement of dispute. What it does is to establish a dispute settlement mechanism so that if there are issues between members in how the agreement is implemented, you have an efficient mechanism to address those disputes. And what is important to note is that under the FCFTA, we are also building on or learning from some of the challenges that we've had in the regional economic communities, because in SADC, for example, we do not have as yet a very functional dispute settlement mechanism to deal with trade disputes, because everything was linked to the tribunal. So what we've done in the AFCFTA is to establish a standalone independent dispute settlement mechanism that builds on the WTO dispute settlement body that will ensure that you can establish panels efficiently and they can deal quickly, especially with regards to products such as agricultural products or perishable goods. Phase two, as I've indicated, will deal with competition, intellectual property and investment. So this year, we will start the process of developing those frameworks for competition, intellectual property and investment. Investment is also quite critical, Chair. South Africa is one of the major investors in the continent, so it's important for us that we have a framework that will govern how investment is protected and promoted in the continent. This is the major market for us, so the FCFTA is quite important to South Africa. One, it provides a very good market for the export of goods and services, but fundamentally the exports of value-added products. 64% of our exports to the rest of the continent are manufactured goods. So the continent is quite critical to our industrial development objectives and our job creation objectives. In terms of total trade, in 2017, our total trade amounted to 421 billion. The exports were 311 billion, with imports of 109 coming into the country. So as you can see, we enjoy a significant trade surplus amounting to 202 billion. But as I said, mainly our exports are destined mainly for SADC and to some extent East Africa. It The FCFTA gives us a market or access to a market of over 1 billion with a combined GDP of 3.3. It encourages rules-based multilateral system, fair and impartial dispute settlement, the issues that I've already touched on, Chair. If I move to now the Southern Africa Customs Union, SACU, the key priorities for us, as members will be aware, SACU consists of Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, Namibia, and South Africa. So those are the five members that constitute the customs union. SACU is a deeper form of integration. We have moved beyond a free trade agreement to a customs union. The customs union is a deeper form in that we have a common external tariff. So for goods that are coming outside of the region, all of us as the five members charge one tariff.
Yeah.
So it means that tariff setting has to be done jointly. So there are a number of issues that are currently under discussion. SACU has been established in 1910, so it's a long standing arrangement that we've had in South Africa, coming from the colonial times to the apartheid times, and then immediately after 1994, South Africa decided to review the agreement with all the other members so that it democratized decision making. That comes with this own dynamic because you are talking about a process where you are supposed to develop or come up with tariffs and common decision on tariffs by consensus among countries at different levels of development. So there are a number of challenges that emanate from that arrangement. So what has been agreed is to review the 2002 SACU agreement, which was negotiated immediately after the democratic dispensation in South Africa. So we are currently busy with that review. The key issues that are reviewed is to review the architecture for tariff setting and administration so that we come up with an arrangement that will take into account the differences in levels of development, but also take into account the common ambition to industrialize in the region. So the aim of the review will achieve that objective. It's to also identify public policy interventions so that we promote the development of regional value chains. It's to strengthen cooperation on trade facilitation and for us to improve border efficiencies. It's to explore new ideas regarding the revenue sharing arrangement with the aim of moving towards the development integration agenda, because currently we collect the revenue together and we divide it according to a specific formula. But there's no mechanism to ensure that that revenue contributes to regional development. So the review of the revenue sharing arrangement will aim to come up with a mechanism that will ensure that we're able to promote the development of regional value chain infrastructure development, also improve trade facilitation. What has been agreed is that South Africa will continue to be the manager of the common revenue pool because we pool all the resources together, and South Africa is the custodian of that and then distributes the revenue according, as I said, to the agreed formula. So there's agreement that we are not going to review that aspect because South Africa has access to more resources but also has advanced financial markets, so it will be able to raise the revenue that is required for the region. So for that purpose, we maintain the current arrangement. What is being assessed is the feasibility of establishing a regional financing mechanism that will ensure that we are able to have a regional approach to development. With regards to the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, SADC consists of 15 member states, of which 13 are members or have acceded to the free trade agreement. We have Angola, DRC, and Comoros that are still to join. Actually, 16 now with the addition of Comoros. Comoros just joined last year as a member of SADC. So they are still involved in their processes to establish how they can join the free trade agreement. The plan or the focus of the work is to consolidate the free trade agreement, because as we implement the free trade agreement, the case of SADC, over 95% of the terrorists are liberalized, and there has been a time frame within which we must complete the terrorist liberalization process. But during the implementation, it's clear that some members are struggling to meet their commitments under the agreement. So it's important that we focus on how we can consolidate the FTA. Some are asking for derogation, some are non-compliant because they need more time to be able to liberalize, given the heavy reliance on tariff revenue for government revenue because of lack of diversified revenue base. So as we embark on the implementation, we also need to be sensitive to those issues, including being sensitive to also the ambitions of the countries to industrialize and have some policy space for them to be able to promote industrial development. Members would also be aware that SADC has developed a regional industrial development strategy that also takes into account the development approach to trade policy. So it's important that there's alignment between what we do on the trade protocol side as well as the industrial development strategy. In terms of where we are, the focus is on the consolidation. However, there is a study that is being undertaken on whether we are ready to establish a customs union. In terms of the decision that was undertaken in 2011, what has been agreed is that we can't jump the step from an FTA to a customs union without making sure that we are fully or we have fully implemented the free trade agreement. So the focus is the implementation of the FTA, including the accession by those members who are currently not part of the FTA. Currently, Angola is in the process of accession, and this is one of the critical markets for South Africa, and they plan to submit their roadmap. In fact, they are going to submit their offer by June 2019, which will be the start of the process to negotiate with Angola in terms of new market access opportunities. Currently, we trade with those countries that are not part of the FTA on an MFN basis, so the most favored nation basis. We have Zimbabwe that has also applied for a special dispensation. They have identified 995 tariff lines of which they are not compliant, and they have asked for a derogation or special dispensation to phase down on those tariffs for a period of over 8 years. And in looking at this request, the last Committee of Ministers of Trade requested Zimbabwe to review the request and also ensure that whatever we do, the outcome should be to promote intra-regional trade rather than to ensure that the arrangement supports imports from elsewhere. So that will be the assessment that will be undertaken before the finalization of this issue. Under SADC, we are also negotiating trade in services. Negotiations have been finalized on transport, financial, telecommunications, and tourism. We are currently busy finalizing the energy and construction. And also last year, the Committee of Ministers of Trade have also added the need to prioritize business services so that we also align with the sectors that have been under, identified or prioritized under the AfCFTA. In terms of the tripartite free trade agreement between the COMESA, East African Community, as well as SADC, this arrangement combines 26 countries with a population of around 625 million and a combined GDP of 1.6 trillion. So with regards to the agreement to underpin the tripartite free trade agreement that is done, now we are busy with tariff negotiations with East Africa as well as Egypt. What the modalities are for this arrangement is that 60% of the tariff line will be for immediate liberalization, 25% will be liberalized over 5 to 8 years, and 15% will be sensitive products that are subject to negotiation. So depending on the outcome of negotiation, the principle of reciprocity, that will depend, that will determine where we end up with regards to the 15%. What the arrangement does is to unlock industrial development. It aims to boost intra-regional trade, but also promote intra-investment. In terms of our trade in the tripartite, if you look at slide 21, you will see again that we trade mainly with the SADC countries, and we are now starting to trade with the East African countries, including Egypt. So if you look at total trade in 2017, our total trade was $27.6 billion. Our trade with Kenya stood at 3.3% of our TFTA exports. And in terms of imports from Egypt, it accounts for 2% of our imports from the rest of the tripartite. So the arrangement will assist to spare or boost trade with the East African community as well as Egypt, because we are still trading from a low base. I will pause there, Chair.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much, DDG, for everyone. I thought if you would just allow me, I didn't see that we also have the acting group chief operating officer sitting just behind. And it's always useful, I think, if the trade industry can sit at the table, then we know who are visitors, as it were. And that is, of course, Ms. Matamela. And then I'm not sure, I'm looking here, but I don't see Ms. Nikki Kruger. Do I? Yeah, right. So that was an apology. And Mr. Mene? No, right. Also an apology. Fine. Also here with us, we have some, just shows that the trade issues here are really the international community always interested in South Africa's trade. We've got someone from the, it looks like the British consulate, Mr. Matthew de Klerk. Someone there, I just can't see. And then we also have the German consul general is here, consulate general, someone from the consulate there, is that Marco Schmidt, yes. And then, of course, we do have Ms. Linda Enser, a journalist from the Business Day, a reporter. Someone that we've worked with over the years, Ms. Trudy Hartzenberg, is at the end there, is the director of the Trade Law Center, TRALAC, at the university here. You're all here with us, and thank you for your interest in what we are doing. Now, members, the DDG has taken us through the regional, as I would put it, trade agreements and so on. And here is your opportunity to engage on the matter. By show of hands, let's have a few minutes from each one. Honorable Montash, is that all we have? Right. Honorable Montash.
Thank you, Chair. We appreciate the presentation from the DDG. I only have one question, which is all the time haunting me. I just want to understand, so maybe you can explain. We have known since whatever time, I don't know, that it is putting the country at a disadvantage that we exporting our raw materials. At which point are we going to change the situation? We've been telling this tale since I grew up that this is putting South Africa at a disadvantage, but we continue. We tell the tale even today. At which point are we going to turn things around for the benefit of our country?
Right. I am just getting my mic on. I do have just a couple of questions myself. It was a reference to, as it were, the harmonization of standards and so on. and that was referred to, I think it would affect all of our regional trade, as it were, especially with the increased regional integration. And you made a reference to the fact that this can grow, but you also pointed out that South Africa was, as it were, the major player there significantly. Now, I understand the idea is not to dwarf our neighbours in that regard, but rather to work in a complementary manner with them, which would also increase their own regional, you know, internal industrialization. Now, what measures is South Africa taking, given that in many areas it is the more developed country, to assist its the other members of these free trade agreements and so on? If you could indicate across the board with respect to standards, etc., and how is the infrastructure developing in this regard? Does it continue to be a regional arrangement, and who is paying for it, given that it would be a regional arrangement to benefit all of the member states? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. With regards to the exports of raw materials, we are making inroads in terms of changing the structure of our trade. Honorable Member Bantashi will see as I go through the presentation how we have managed to change the structure of trade. Because, for example, with our trade in Europe, now the biggest export product that we are exporting to European countries are motor vehicles. It accounts for 26% of our trade, then followed by your primary product. So we are making inroads in that regard, but of course we can do much more. And so it's therefore important for us to ensure that the trade policy supports industrial development, which is why the strategic direction that is provided for in the trade policy strategic framework continues to guide our work, that we must ensure that we adopt a strategic approach to trade policy and tariffs to ensure that whatever we do on tariffs supports industrial development and also supports our objectives to move more higher into a value-added product and move up the value chain. So that is the core objective. So the trade policy is therefore the other side of the coin of industrial policy. Then when it comes to the issue around what we are doing, given the fact that South Africa is more industrialized and that we need to promote complementarity in trade, we agree with you, Chair, that that is the objective. And what we have done is to ensure that the trade arrangements that we participate in support broadly development of all the countries that are participating in those arrangements, which is why even in SACU, we are now talking about a development integration agenda that will also add the priority will be about industrial development. So what we have done is that we have established a unit of the DTI in 2017 or 16, the Trade Invest Africa. What it does is to adopt an outward investment approach when it comes to the continent, because currently, even though with SADC we implemented the FTA in 2008, what we have seen is that the other countries are unable to take advantage of the South African market. And this is because of lack of productive capacity constraints as well as infrastructure development, hence the development integration agenda. So the investment-led trade strategy aims to promote outward investment by South Africa into the rest of the continent, specifically on industrial or manufacturing activity. So we are working very closely through the binational commission or bilateral agreements and arrangements that we have
with the rest of the continent to identify priority sectors for those countries and mobilize South African investment so that there can be investment in those countries. We also have adopted the guideline on good business practice for South African companies that are operating in the rest of the continent. And what that guide does, and a number of our companies have signed up to the guideline. Again, today we'll be launching the signing ceremony, or we'll be having a signing ceremony for the liquor industry. Because what those guidelines do is to identify or key principles that should underpin South African investment in the rest of the continent. And the priority again there is to ensure that the South African investment must contribute to industrial development of countries. We must promote skills development, ensure that our companies adhere to the domestic laws of the countries in which they operate in. They must promote skills development, adhere to labor, human rights, all of those issues are entailed in that guide. So we are also trying to ensure that South African investment contributes not only to inclusive growth, but also sustainable development in the countries that they participate in. With regards to standards, we have established regional bodies that promote harmonization of standards. In SADC, for example, we have an institution called SADCA, and our own institutions in South Africa, SANAS, NRCS, they contribute in terms of providing capacity building, in terms of testing of products to ensure that they adhere to international standards. And the regional countries all contribute a specific amount to keep SADCAS running. So it's an institution that is run by the regional countries to ensure that we are able to harmonize standards, but also there are testing facilities for our products. And in some of the cases, also the development partners contribute to those regional institutions. But also bilaterally, we have mechanisms, Chair, where we work with the countries with regards to cooperation on standards.
Okay. Well, I can't push
the
further away again.
It's a slippery table. there was one other thing which I thought, well, perhaps other members have been doing so much reading, they certainly have a clear understanding of all of the principles, but the one which I think may be of value for us to have a clear understanding of what the principles in which you referred to as absolutely key in this regard, and that was reciprocity, which everyone, you know, it's, as it were, a common English word. But then when you talk about trade and the geometry, I'm sure if I asked anyone on my right here what that meant, perhaps the Honourable Kachalia may know, but I doubt very many people would know what we mean by that. So, if you would go through with that. Is that a question or comment, Honourable McPherson?
I just want to ask where we are in terms of the SAPU review. How long is it going to take place? What are sort of the parameters for that discussion? And who is leading that discussion on behalf of South Africa? And then with respect to SADC, you will know that I've raised a number of times the issue of goods being brought into South Africa duty-free through SADC, and you know it is quite possible that they are being transshipped and their original point of origin is not being disclosed. It is something that the Minister is aware of, it's something that he said he's concerned about, but how are we fitting in the discussions about improving points of origin in SADC so that what we know is being brought into South Africa duty-free is fairly from SADC countries and not simply being transshipped through them?
Yes, did you want to come up with something, Honourable Buyani?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'd like to first welcome the presentation. And also I've got three clarification questions. One, the mandate of launching the... I wanted to check, man, because in terms of the launch in an extraordinary summit in March, they agreed in creating a one single market, single market for goods and services. The other one expedited continental integration, and also to harmonize trade continental regime. So I wanted to check how far are they in terms of establishing the single rule book which governs all the, and also because he's talking of dumping, so how far are they? Because really, if you talk of dumping, that means the single rule book is not working, and also the single market for goods is not working. So I wanted clarity on that one. And also this issue, man. Of China, I'm not so sure because currently they're experiencing low growth in the GDP. How are they going to affect that? Thank you.
Thank you
very much, Honourable Briani. Over to you, Honourable Colerwa.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to variable geometry, what we mean is that given that countries are at different levels of development, the implementation will be at different speeds. So some countries may take longer to implement, or some countries may implement the FCFTA based on their own development objectives at a later stage. So it allows us to move at different speeds, taking into account the circumstances in the continent, which has been the approach that has also informed how we are implementing the tripartite, because currently the negotiations on tariffs are between SACCO and the EAC and SACCO and Egypt. So it means that those countries, since they are ready to move and implement and finalize, they can go ahead and implement rather than wait for everyone else to say we are ready to now implement. So it also allows for the integration to take momentum because the others will then be encouraged by the progress that is made by others in the process. Then with regards to the SACCO review, the key parameters are captured in slide 16, where we talk about reviewing the architecture for tariff setting, the review of the revenue sharing arrangement, and the core aspect of the review of the revenue sharing arrangement is to make provision for a regional financing mechanism to implement cross-border projects. Then it's about also the how we improve the customs efficiencies to facilitate cross-border movement of goods across the customs union. And then the fourth element is the industrial development element. And the key objective there is to establish the regional value chain. So those are the core parameters of the review. In terms of who leads, the DTI would lead on the trade aspect, trade and industry aspect, so the regional value chains, the efficient tariff setting mechanisms, as well as the customs issues, the DTI needs. Then when it comes to the review of the revenue sharing arrangements, including the establishment of the financing mechanism, national treasury needs on that. The review is being undertaken through two ministerial task teams. So there's a ministerial task team on trade and industry and a ministerial task team on finance that deals with the different aspects of the review. And then these task teams report to the Council of Ministers, which includes both the ministers of trade and finance.
we will then look at progress and also ensure that there's alignment between what is being proposed by the Tasking on Finance, for example, as it relates to how we finance cross-border projects. So that is how the review is being undertaken.
In terms of the time frame, we set ourselves an ambitious time frame, which is 2 years, so we should be finalizing this year. However, I think it is clear, given the fundamental issues that are inherent in the review, that that time frame may not be sufficient. And in the summit last year, the summit had indicated that the ministerial task teams must review the progress and then come up with a new work program that will indicate how much more time we need with regard to the review. So that process will probably be undertaken by June to look at how much time in terms of an extension we still need for the review. Then in terms of SADC and the rules of origin, the approach to rules of origin is quite critical to ensure that the benefits of the free trade agreement accrue to the members that are part of the FTA. And also, the approach to rules of origin must also support our overall ambition to industrialize. So there's a link between the rules of origin, which are the conditions that the product must meet for it to receive a preference, as well as the tariffs that are agreed, but also the broader development objectives of the region. And yes, it is the case that sometimes there is a level of transshipment that we need to address. And that can be addressed through enforcement, as well as monitoring of the goods that are coming through. And SARS and the DTI are working very closely in the cases where we have picked up that, especially in the case of clothing and textiles, that there is a case, or there are cases where there's just a change of the label to say the product is originating, and you can see that we don't have adequate capacity as a region to produce either that product or produce it in the quantity that are coming through into the country. So the customs cooperation arrangements, as well as the mutual administrative assistance arrangements that SARS has with a number of regional partners, gives us an opportunity to then engage with the customs authorities of the other country to say, we are picking up this trend that is worrying, that gives us an indication that there's a case of transshipment, and then we work out a mechanism. Of course, some of it, I think, requires also capacity within SARS to deal effectively with those issues, but it is a worrying trend. And the message that we normally send to our regional partners is that those kinds of issues actually undermine productive capacity in the region, because if we are importing elsewhere and then want the product to be treated as if it is originating in the region, we are collectively undermining our productive capacity. And it's important that we work collectively as a region to stamp out the transshipment and ensure that the benefits that accrue are only for, or preferences are only given to products that are produced in the region. Then when it comes to the AfDFTA and how far we are at a stage where the legal framework for the continental, or the legal framework in terms of the agreement itself and its protocol, is agreed and finalized. The January 2019 summit also resolved one of the outstanding issues related to the modalities for the tariff phase down, and that related to how we are going to treat the sensitive products. The level of ambition for the AfDFTA is 90% tariff phase down at entry into force over a number of years. Then the 10% is the sensitive product, and then the issue was how are we going to deal with that 10%. So that has now been resolved at the January summit, that we will have 7% sensitivities and 3% exclusion. Quite an ambitious outcome, but that has now been resolved. So now countries will embark in a process of preparing their tariff offers in line with those modalities.
So it's expected that by June there will be a submission of the offers, and then the process of tariff negotiations will then start. So so far we have a legal framework, but we don't have a functional FTA that allows for that single market or the free flow of goods and services. So it will only be done once we finalize those aspects. So there's still a process of negotiation that still needs to take place. Then the impact of China on the economy of the continent and how we are likely to be affected, including South Africa. If there's slow growth in China, China is one of our biggest trading partners, if you look at a single country, South Africa. So it's the largest trading partner for South Africa as a single country. So if there's slow growth, it may mean a reduction in demand for our products. And they are the biggest importers, especially of primary products, including minerals. So it may mean a reduction of demand, and also it may affect our exports of the products that are currently going to China. So it's very important that as a country we diversify, one, the production base, but also diversify our export partners or trading partners, which is why we are also opening up these trading arrangements, not only within the region, but also the continent, and also look at alternative markets for our products beyond just your current trading partner. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. And now, looking at everyone, I think we can move on. Did you want to ask a question, Honourable Khadebe?
No, Chairperson, it's not matter of asking a question, but it will be a comment around the issues of the red, of these agreements. First of all, we know very well that we have these low levels of intra-Africa trade because of infrastructure development. All our countries were fully managed. The infrastructure was constructed in such a way that it all went toward the roads, the way toward the ports, so that these raw materials can be shipped out as quickly as possible. And this thing is still happening, Chair. I was in Cameroon in 2014.
Yeah.
We could see huge trucks, the transporting timber, right, towards the ports, and they're getting out. And then but what was very interesting is that when the tables were using the furniture, we could see that they are coming from the colonial masters back, then the timber was out, it came back. I don't know whether in these agreements do we have some sort of a master plan for infrastructure in integrating the African countries. Because if you don't do that, I think that this issue of under trade between ourselves is going to be under trade between ourselves is going to be undermined. Is there any infrastructure plan which is in place for that? And then the other issue will be the issue, they say protocol in goods and services or the agreement around that. You know, there's this big dam, the potential for the largest hydroelectric power plant in DRC, Inga Dam Project. I wonder whether South Africa has taken up its share which was supposed to have been taken up. Because if, why I'm asking this, is because this Inga Dam Project has been there for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this new type of, what is this new renewable energy type,
mm-hmm,
of this thing. South Africa took them quickly, but the other one, it has not been taken up. So what might be the constraint? What's the problem that is it still the colonial master controlling us? Because when you look at the technology of renewables, it's not coming from us, it's coming from Europe, I'll be honest. It's mainly from that side. But something which could help us, our resources. Why did South Africa not sign up to its quota, which was supposed to be done if this program of Inga Dam was supposed to be realized? And then the other issue, Chair, is the issue of transfrontier paths. We know very well that there's this cooperation between South Africa and other side countries, but we had the transfrontier paths. But immediately after that, our rhinos were almost decimated. So what safeguard measures were they in place so that as we make this agreement, we protect our resources as a country? And then the other issue, the fourth one, Chair, is there up there in West, Northwest Africa? You know very well that the President Bako of AgriCos was disposed. When you look very well why, it's because he offered the tender of a bridge to China instead of France. And then it was disposed, and then now it is discovered that there was no case for him. That's why the ICC has released him. It has released him, but the damage has been done. So how do you, as you make this agreement, how do you protect the African governance system? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadebe. If you would respond to that before we move on to the next section, Honourable, DDG Galerwa.
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadebe. There are other issues I may be constrained to respond to because they do not fall within the ambit of the DTI. For example, the Inga Dam is the Department of Water Affairs that deals with that. I know, though, that this is a priority for not only South Africa but also for the region. It's one of the priority regional projects because it can unlock agricultural growth but also can deal with the water challenges that we have. Actually, the Inga Dam can power the whole of Africa in terms of hydroelectricity. So it's a critical project that has been identified not only within SADC but also the AFCFTA, within the continent as well. But in terms of where the progress is or where the challenges are, the Department of Water Affairs would be best placed to respond. Also, with regards to the Transfrontier Park, it's the Department of Environmental Affairs that has the mandate with regards to that. We, of course, in terms of the trade agreement, if you look at the ambition and the objective, is to ensure that we promote trade that supports inclusive growth and that supports sustainable development. So it will be important to then look at the measures that are implemented within those transfrontier parks to ensure that at the end of the day, and I don't think there is trade in rhino that is facilitated through those transfrontier parks. It may be an issue of poaching that requires enforcement and monitoring of how we are managing those transfrontier parks. But again, there, the Department of Environmental Affairs would probably be best placed to respond to that. But with regards to the infrastructure plan, as I indicated, the Development Integration Agenda takes into account exactly what you have just raised, that the fundamental constraints to intra-Africa trade is not necessarily related to tariffs. Tariffs is just a small component of that. The reason we have low levels of intra-Africa trade is that either we produce similar products, because we are mainly agricultural-based economies or mineral producers, so the potential to trade with each other is then limited. And the other challenge relates to lack of productive capacity, because if each country can diversify, add value to its products, add source, then we'll be able to offer each other more products than we are currently able to, which is why we end up trading more with the world than ourselves. So the issue of industrial development, beneficiation, and value addition has to be the core component of what we do in the continent if we want to change the structure of our trade. So it's an issue that we're looking at, and therefore also infrastructure development is quite critical. And as you rightly said, the current infrastructure is such that the product or mineral deposits are in a specific area, the infrastructure will go to the port to take it away, rather than to ensure that there's integration within. SADC has a master plan, infrastructure master plan, that has identified corridors that will facilitate the interconnectivity. Also at the continental level, there's a Presidential Infrastructure Champion Initiative that is championed by South Africa, where eight key corridors have been identified. And those corridors have been identified looking at the potential for industrial capacity in a specific area and to look at how we can link
the various countries to promote intra-regional trade. So there is a master plan that exists, and the aim is to therefore work together as the regional community and regional countries to also ensure that we're able to achieve what is in the regional plan. And most of it, you know, our DFIs are playing a critical role both in the packaging of the projects, because once the projects are packaged to bankability, investors quickly come in. But the major challenge has been the lack of bankable projects to be able to move in speed with the implementation of the infrastructure work program.
Yes, do you want to, is this a follow-up on the Volkadebe?
Chairperson, I think that the DTI knows very well that you cannot industrialize without energy.
Yeah.
I think the issue of industrialization is the mandate of DTI. I think that the issue of the Inga Dam project, we must have that interest. Because if you can provide electricity for the whole continent, it means that the potential for industrializing the whole continent will be high. So I think that that answer of saying that it is water affairs only, but it affects you directly, because if the DRC does not have enough electricity, it cannot beneficiate its own minerals. If we were running short of electricity in South Africa, as of speaking. So the issue of the project like Inga Dam is a must for everyone. I think that you must always package that as you are doing this. You know, protocols in goods and services, trade in goods and services, is part of the electricity, is the same. So something which you must also prioritize. Thank you, Chief.
I see the DDG struggling to see you because you're on the same side all the time. It's always better to sit opposite. But just on that, I think it's something, Mr. Hermans, we could just note, and members of the committee, the as the DDG began, I think she emphasized the issue of the main mandate, and that trade was at the service, in other words, to implement industrialization, not the other way around. Specifically, that change was made 10 years ago to swing it entirely around. So, in fact, I'm just quoting from your own document, trade policy is an instrument of industrial policy. So I think in that respect then, it is worth noting the issue around the infrastructure, in particular the role that Inga Dam would play in providing clean energy in the first place, and then complying with our carbon policy, and facilitating the region moving forward in industrialization. But I think that's on the energy front, and in Africa, with Honorable Khadebe also referred to the networking. And I would imagine your reference was with respect to transportation almost in that regard, whether it's rail or road. How do we integrate our continent in that regard, so that, because currently a lot of the argument, or not the argument, but in our negotiations the issue often comes up, yes, the fact of the matter is it's cheaper to transport out of Africa than it is to transport your products within Africa. So, you know, I'm a businessman, so I've got to look at it like that. So these things, if we can appeal to the department to integrate this issue so that there's more cross-pollination and cross-support, if you like, in this regard, it would be appreciated. I think we will now move on to the EU side and these other agreements, as it were, trade agreements, a status report on the negotiations and where we are. And at the same time, I'm just handing over the chair for a short while to the Honourable Khadebe.
All right, Honourable members, I think now we're on page 23. where we're supposed to deal with the trade agreements with countries in Europe and the EU itself. I think the presenter can fire on so that we can start.
Thanks, Honorable Khatebe. With regard to the EU, I will touch on two agreements, the Economic Partnership Agreement with the European Union, as well as EFTA. With regards to the discussions that we are having with the UK to roll over the Economic Partnership Agreement, a presentation has already been given, and Minister also touched on it yesterday, so I won't cover that aspect because there was a specific presentation that was given to the Honourable Members on Brexit. Now, if I touch on the Economic Partnership Agreement with the European Union, we had, as members will recall, a bilateral agreement with the European Union, which was the Trade Development and Cooperation Agreement, the TDCA. So when the negotiations started with the BLNS and Mozambique on an economic partnership agreement with the EU, South Africa, even though it had its own agreement, because it was decided that we needed to be treated differently by the EU, we could not be part of the trade chapter of the Cotonou, therefore South Africa had to negotiate a free trade agreement with the EU, and also South Africa was treated differently in that the others who were part of Cotonou had duty-free, quota-free access into the EU, and South Africa on some of the products didn't have. So even as part of the TDCA, we were treated differently. Even under the Economic Partnership Agreement, there are some products where South Africa has to negotiate tariff rate quotas with the EU because we don't have duty-free, quota-free access into the EU. So we decided to join the discussions on the EPA because for us the concern was the implication of different trade arrangements with the EU between regional partners because we have our own regional economic integration agenda in SACWE and SADC. So if we were treated differently and trading with the EU differently, especially as members of a customs union, it would have fractured the common external tariffs that I've referred to that we have in SACWE. So for that reason, we decided to join. And we also wanted to join because we were aware that there were some limitations in the Trade Development Cooperation Agreement, especially with regards to agricultural exports, so we needed to increase or improve our market access for agricultural exports, but also claw back on some of the policy space that we lost under the TDCA. So we negotiated, and the EPA was finalized and provisionally entered into force on 10 October 2016, except for new agricultural market access that only entered into force on the 1st of November 2016. So what the EPA did was to improve market access for 32 agricultural products, and we have managed to also significantly improve market access to the EU for wine, which increased to 110 million litres duty-free, for sugar, 150,000 tonnes duty-free. We also have new market access for ethanol of 80,000 tonnes duty-free. In addition to the new market access and also the improvements, we also improved access for flours, some dairy products, fruit, and fruit products. We also managed to get new market access for fishery products. So that was the additional benefit beyond what obtained under the TDCA that we got out of the Economic Partnership Agreement. What we also managed to get was improvement in the rules of origin, which allow for extended accumulation, which will facilitate that we are able to promote intra-regional trade, but also the development of regional value chains across southern as well as East Africa. As I said, one of the critical issues for us was to claw back on the policy space that we lost under the TDCA, and this related specifically to the fact that we could not impose export taxes beyond what existed
at the time that we implemented the TDCA. So under the EPA, we can now implement export taxes on a number of products with specific conditions vis-a-vis the EU. Also, we managed to deal with the standstill clause, which has been eased under the EPA. And we also have a product, an agreed list of products, which will be subjected to an automatic specific agricultural safeguard. So there's a volume of imports that has been agreed. So once that level of imports is reached, then automatically, without having to go to an investigation, we can impose a safeguard, which makes it very easy for us to protect our agricultural products. We also have a protocol on geographic indication that protects 102 wines, as well as three agricultural product names, which is rooibos, honeybush, and caro lamb. And we also have a further space to protect an additional 30 names under the protocol. Geographic indications they allow our products to achieve a premium price, in that a product that has specific quality, because it is produced in a specific locality, would then have, because of those qualities, would be able to attract a higher premium when it is exported or traded. So we have protected, as I said, rooibos, honeybush, and caro lamb, but we have additional space for 30 names that agriculture is currently busy looking at. In terms of the statistics, I said when it comes to China is the biggest trading partner for South Africa if you look at a single country. But if you look at the EU as a bloc, the EU is the biggest trading partner. Our total trade has increased significantly since the implementation of the agreement, including the TDCA, because implemented the agreement in 2016, so we are in the third or fourth year of implementation. So our trade has really increased. Our total trade in 2017 stood at 600 billion rand. So it's an increase of 34% since 2013, where we stood at 449 billion. We've also managed to increase our exports. The exports were standing at 167 billion in 2013. Now we're standing at 262 billion in 2017. So there has been also a positive development for our exports as well. And we'll also, in the later slide, show the trends of the products that have increased. What is still of concern to us is that, and again, the difference of view because of the different sources of statistics and what is included in those statistics, but our statistics, which are based on the sub-statistics, show that the trade is still in favor of the EU. However, the good development is that the trade deficit has decreased over time. So in 2013, the deficit was 115 billion. But in 2017, it decreased to 76 billion rand. As I said in my earlier intervention, we have managed to diversify our exports into the EU, and now the vehicles are our biggest export into the EU, and they contribute 26% to our total exports. And they are followed by nuclear reactors, then it's the mineral products, fruits and nuts, the oils, the slag and ash. Those are the top five exports into the EU. We also have a concern in that the top five exports, which I've just mentioned, account for 65% of our total exports into the EU. So the trade or the exports are concentrated among only a few products. So we still have a huge role in terms of diversifying our export base so that we're able to take advantage of the market access opportunities in the EU. Now, if you look at those products where we are not, where South Africa is trading under the quotas and where we do not have duty-free, quota-free access into the EU, mm-hmm. This includes wine, sugar, ethanol. So if you look at that, South Africa has been able to increase the utilization rate. For the wine quota, in 2017, we utilized 78% of that wine quota. In 2018, the utilization rate increased to 90%. So our industry and traders are taking advantage of these new market access opportunities. If you look at sugar, in the first year of implementation, there was 94% utilization, and in 2018, we stood at 99.8%, so almost full utilization of that quota. Ethanol is where we still have a low level of utilization. In 2017, the industry only utilized 13.8% of the quota. That increased somewhat, but it's still very low in terms of the 2018 figures. The utilization rate is around 15.9%. So we are engaging the industry to take advantage of these market access opportunities because it will assist the industry to create more jobs and be more sustainable. So from this, members can see that we have really been able to increase our wine, sugar, as well as mainly wine and sugar exports, but also citrus into the EU has also increased quite significantly. We've also been able to increase our exports of some shrimp and prawns to the fishery products. And the increased exports was around 11.7% from 26 million in 2016 to 29 million rands in 2017. As I said, Chair, if you look at the state of play in the implementation of the EPA, we are in our fourth year of implementation, so it's relatively still a new agreement. And the previous slide does show the positive developments and the fact that we have been able to increase our exports into the EU. What is important is to also note that there are some of the implementation issues that have been raised by both parties that we are dealing with. So we just had last week the first joint council of the EPA that looked at the implementation of the agreement. We have also seen significant increase in imports from the EU, especially on products where the EU has tariff rate quotas as well. We have seen a significant increase in imports of wheat. Honourable members will be aware that we have a wheat quota with the EU that has been that has increased significantly. So the wheat imports were standing at 266 million euros in 2017. There has been an increase in the pig fat, which is also one of the products under the quota from the EU coming into SACCO. There's been an increase in butter from the EU. So the benefits have been accruing to both sides where they have also taken advantage of the agreement. So that was what came out of the first joint council, that there have been positive developments. However, there are, as I said, also implementation issues. We've also had to, as SACCO, implement a bilateral safeguard duty on EU poultry, which also increased quite significantly into the SACCO market, imposing risks to the domestic industry. And as we indicated in terms of the strategic approach, there's a role of ITEC. So this was implemented following due process by an independent institution in South Africa, which is ITEC, that undertook the investigation and found that there is evidence that there is a surge in imports of poultry from the EU that justify the 35.5% safeguard vis-à-vis the EU. In terms of the agreement, Article 34 of the agreement, we can implement this safeguard for a period of 4 years. This is the first year of implementation, and we have also shared with the EU the phase down as entailed in the agreement, how we are going to phase down over the period of 4 years. So that is where we are with the poultry and safeguard. What the Joint Council also did was to adopt an institutional framework terms of the critical institutions that will govern the implementation of the EPA. We have the Joint Council, we have the Trade Development Committee, but also the dispute settlement mechanism. So the rules of procedure of all of those institutions was adopted, including the code of conduct for arbitrators and mediators in the case where there are disputes between members. What the Joint Council agreed to do is to enhance the dialogue, but also work on enhancing cooperation, development cooperation, especially when it comes to the diversification of the economy of the SADC EPA states as well as the export basket, because this was the issue that was emphasized by the SADC EPA states, that what is critical as we implement the EPA is that it must support first and foremost our development objectives as the region. That the EPA will now move to the European Free Trade Association, which is another agreement that we have with European countries, which includes Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway, and Switzerland. The agreement was signed in 2006 and it entered into force in 2008. It includes bilateral agreements on basic agricultural products, but excludes processed agricultural products, where we enter into individual agreements with the EFTA states. In terms of the EFTA, we have duty-free, quota-free access for our industrial products. So where the discussions around the review of the agreement, they center around improved market access for agricultural products. And because these are countries that are based in Europe that also have arrangements with the EU, what we do is to align what we, the market access that we have under the EPA as well as the market access that obtains under EFTA. So we waited for the review of the EFTA agreement until we concluded with the EU on the EPA. So now that we have concluded and are implementing the EPA, we are now reviewing what we need to do with regards to EFTA. So we'll have the fourth joint review now in March 2019. If we look at the composition of our trade and also trade with EFTA, it's mainly in primary products. And the trade balance, though, is in favor of South Africa. So we have a trade surplus with the EFTA countries. In terms of total trade, it has increased from 11 billion in 2007 to 25.26 billion in 2017. So there has been a 129% increase. But of course, there's a lot of potential that we need to explore with regards to the EFTA countries. Our exports amounted to 13.9 billion in 2017, and the imports were around 11.3. So there's a trade surplus of 5.3 billion. So our exports to EFTA account for a small percentage of our total exports. It's 1.17% of FA's total exports to the world, and also our imports from EFTA account for 1.15% of our total imports, global imports. Motor vehicles again account for the biggest portion of our trade with EFTA. In terms of the way forward, what we're looking to get out of the review is to improve our access for basic and processed agricultural products. As I said, we already have duty-free, quota-free access for non-agricultural products. We are now looking at the offers that have been exchanged between the parties to look at how we can provide preferential access to each other on agriculture as well as processed agricultural products. The negotiations are still ongoing, and as I said, the next round of negotiations will be this month. So that is the trade with the European countries under the two agreements. As I said, with Brexit, we covered it last week, so I won't touch on that. Now we move to, Honourable Chair, the trade agreements with the BRICS countries. We have SACU-India preferential trade agreement. These negotiations have stalled somewhat because of differences in the level of emissions between the countries. However, we have agreed to continue with the discussion. SACU has approached India to look at when we can meet at senior officials level to look at refining the level of emissions so that we can work towards the conclusion of the preferential trade agreement. The benefits of the PTA with India is that it will assist to boost South-South trade in a targeted manner. India is also one of our largest trading partners, and the arrangement will also assist to further increase trade between us and India. So we are finalizing our offer. We've also been engaging with our stakeholders and constituencies through NEDLAB, and they've raised a number of issues that will need to be addressed, including the non-tariff barriers, which will, of course, are naturally part of a trade agreement in any way, and also to be aware of sensitive sectors such as clothing and textile that will require careful discussion as we engage with India. We also have a trade agreement with Mercosur. It's another preferential trade agreement, which has been implemented since 2016. It covers about 1,000 tariff lines on both sides. We are also in the third year of implementation of that agreement, and we met under the first joint administration committee in May 2017 to look at how we facilitate the implementation of the agreement, including creating exposure to traders about the benefits of the agreement. We have a trade deficit with Mercosur countries. In 2017, we exported 8.9 billion rand worth of products, and the imports were 29.7. The total trade is at 8.6 million, so there's a deficit of 20.7 million in favor of Mercosur. If you look at the utilization rate of the agreement, the key products that have been exported from South Africa to take advantage of the agreement is aluminium, iron and steel, mineral fuels, the vehicles, and machinery. And we have seen growth in most of the sectors. Aluminium increased exports by 163%. There has been a drop in iron and steel, and it's something that we're investigating because there's been a drop of 6.4%. The vehicles have increased by 15.3%, machinery an increase of 9.7%. So there are some sectors that are starting to take advantage of the agreement. In terms of the way forward, the plan is to increase the exposure, as I've said, Honourable Chair, and we've agreed to co-organise trade exhibitions and fairs, and also participate in each other's key trade fairs to create awareness about the value of the agreement, but also work towards outward selling missions, which one of our divisions, which is Trade Invest South Africa, deals with. So that is the plan, to create more awareness. If I now move to the WTO, the multilateral trading system chair is going through significant challenges, and they are seriously unprecedented. And what we are witnessing is an increase in unilateralism, an increase in protectionism, that is undermining the multilateral trading system. And the number of discussions that are being undertaken, including what is now termed open plurilateral, which we are concerned about in South Africa, that even though plurilaterals are allowed within the WTO, the concern in how some of the plurilaterals are being implemented is that they will likely fragment the multilateral trading system.
the number of challenges that are currently facing the WTO, one of those is the fact that there's a risk of disabling the appellate body, apologies for putting the abbreviation, the appellate body, which is an institution of the dispute settlement body of the WTO. So you go through the dispute settlement body, and then if you want to appeal the ruling, then you go through the appellate body. The U.S. has resisted the appointment of members of the appellate body. Ordinarily, the appellate body has 7 members. Currently, it's left with 3, and by the end of the year, it will be left with 1, which will render the institution not effective. So it's an emergent or urgent issue that we need to address. But also what we've seen is that there are calls among some quarters for the reform and modernization of the WTO.
No.
It has been mainly driven by the US, but also supported by the EU and Japan. You recall, Chair, that in developing countries, we have consistently advocated for the WTO to be reformed and for development to be central to the work of the WTO, so that there can be inclusive growth and sustainable development, and that developing countries can effectively participate in global trade. In the earlier slides, I indicated that our contribution as Africa as a whole to global trade stands around 3%, which is quite low. So if we don't deal with the development issues within the WTO, and also ensure that developing countries are able to fully participate in global trade, and that will undermine the objectives that we have as a continent to move up the value chain, but also industrialize. And the concern that we have is that some of the issues that are raised in the context of the reform is one, the need to deal with the gaps that are identified by some members with regards to the WTO rulebook, where they feel that there's a need to level the playing field. And the number of issues that are raised with regards to, one, the role of China and how China has driven its own development, but also if you look at the implications of that, is that it will have implications not only for China but for all of us, because it's about proposing rules that will be applicable to the whole WTO membership. The proposals that have been put forward to mainly cover 6 issues. Mm-hmm. The first one is the need to narrow the scope and application of special and differential treatment, which means that, and there has been a discussion around the approach that has been taken with regards to the Trade Facilitation Agreement of the WTO. If you look at the Trade Facilitation Agreement of the WTO, what has been agreed is that we all undertake the same commitments, but there are different speeds at which we achieve those commitments. Developed countries will implement immediately, developing countries will implement over a specific period of time, and the least developed countries will have a longer time frame to implement, but effectively all of us have the same commitments. So it seems that that approach is now an approach that is being advanced in all the areas of the WTO, that that should be how we implement commitments going forward. So what it effectively means is that you would have limited time or time to implement specific obligations, but effectively the same commitment. It also refers to adjusting the principle of consensus decision making.
Yeah.
The Marrakesh Agreement states that decision making in the WTO is by consensus, and it also defines what consensus is. So what is now being proposed in order to make inroads to deal with these gaps in the rules is that we need to adjust the principle of consensus, and this is why you see that some members are now saying that they are ready to move in specific issues. The other concern, as I said, is the development of now the open plurilaterals, and the push is to regularize these plurilateral agreements. What we also see in the proposal is tightening of rules on industrial subsidies,
the role of state-owned enterprises, mm-hmm. but also tighten the rules on intellectual property rights, which will have significant implications for developing countries, including South Africa. There are also proposals around strengthening the rules on transparency and notifications, and this does not, what is worrying about some of the proposals, because we all, as members of the WTO, have obligations in terms of transparency so that we know how the rules are implemented, which is not under question, but the proposals ignore some of the capacity constraints, especially in African countries, because the notification requirements come up with need for resources to be set aside for you to be able to comply and submit the necessary information in the WTO. Now, what is proposed are penalties if you are unable to comply with your transparency and notification obligations, which, as I say, doesn't take into account that in some cases there are legitimate reasons why members are struggling to comply with their obligations. But we do acknowledge the importance of transparency and notification. Some of the proposals are around enhancing the role of the secretariat, so that if in a specific country you are not able to notify your specific obligations, the secretariat can, on your behalf, notify for you, which is problematic. So clearly, all of these, if you look at the proposals in a nutshell, they reduce or aim to eliminate differentiation in the WTO. The U.S. has also submitted a paper recently with regards to the self-designation of countries within the WTO. In the WTO, there are three categories. You have least developed countries, you have developing countries, and you have developed countries. The criteria for least developed countries is clear. However, countries have they can designate themselves under the two categories, developing or developed. And you'd recall, Chair, that under the apartheid government decided to notify us as a developed country, and then under the Uruguay round, we took a significant cut as a developed country. So, but each country has a leeway to then designate itself. So what the proposal that has been put forward by the U.S. is to take away that self-designation that you have specific categories depending on where you are, and the implications for us as a country in terms of the obligations that we have to take, but also the flexibilities and the special and differential treatment that will be available to us if the U.S. proposal goes through. So what will be important going forward, looking into this discussion around the reform, will be for us to watch carefully these proposals and engage in the debate once it comes to the WTO. The concern that we've had so far is that the discussions are taking place outside of the WTO. The number of groupings and formations that are established to discuss this issue without bringing it into the WTO, which doesn't make the discussion participative and also inclusive. So what we've been calling for is that the discussion must take place within the WTO so that everyone can contribute to the discussion to say what type and form and what will be the parameters for the reform of the WTO and what are the issues that must be taken into account. Also taking into account the balance of concessions that have been achieved so far in the WTO, which take into account the flexibilities and the S&D that has been availed to developing countries, because if developing countries didn't have those flexibilities, maybe they would not have made the concessions that they've made. You make those concessions taking into account the flexibilities that are available to you. So depending on how the reform takes place, it may affect that balance of concession that has been achieved in the various rounds that we've had. But in terms of the Africa position, I'll quickly go through the position. Fundamentally, the principle that informs our position is to ensure that development is central to everything that we do in the WTO, including the special and differential treatment, the need to continue the principles that underpin the Dual Development Agenda. So for us, development must remain core to any negotiation outcome in the WTO, and that we need to ensure that even as we talk about the reform should not only deal with specific issues of concern to some members, it should also include the unresolved issues in the Doha Development Agenda. The biggest area where, as developing countries, we have space competitive advantage is in agriculture. So it will be important to continue to advocate for the elimination of trade-distorting measures and domestic support on agriculture that hamper our ability to fully take advantage of global trade. And this will include the permanent solution on public stock holding, including the special safeguard mechanism. The issues of the cotton fall are also critical, and they still remain unresolved even after MC11. We also advocate for multilateral agreement to discipline certain forms of subsidies when it comes to fisheries. This is in line with the Sustainable Development 2030 Agenda. We advocate for SND, special and differential treatment. With regards to services, our approach is to reaffirm the flexibilities for developing countries as they are inscribed in GATT. We also advocate, as I said, Honourable Chair, the biggest number of LDCs is in Africa, so there's a need to continue to prioritise the issues of importance to LDCs, including their accessions, because what we have seen is that the requirements that are put on, especially LDCs, to accede to the WTO, they make it very difficult for a number of countries to accede. So it's important that there's maximum flexibility to African LDCs that are undergoing accession. We continue to call for the amendment of the TRIPS agreement to ease access to affordable medicines. So that is also quite critical, including the Convention on Biological Diversity, which are the issues that are mutually reinforcing. With regards to the Trade Facilitation Agreement, there's a need to also look at infrastructure development, the issue that we have just spoken to, because we can't talk about trade facilitation outside of the need to deal with the constraints that are related to both soft and hard infrastructure. When it comes to aid for trade, we underline the importance of that, especially when it comes to addressing the supply side constraints, because the reason why we are unable to participate fully and effectively in global trade are the supply side constraints. So our position is to preserve the multilateral trading system, but ensure that the system supports development, and that development continues to be core to the work program of the WTO. We continue to advocate for progress and on all the outstanding issues that are under the Doha Development Agenda, and that any package that is agreed must have a developmental character and must support inclusive growth, because our view is that what is leading to the backlash against the multilateral trading system and trade agreements globally is because there are many people that feel left behind and feel that the multilateral trading system has led to an increase in inequality. Yes, there are positive developments to it, but it's important to also deal with the challenges that have been identified and ensure that the system supports inclusive growth. So it will be important that we have a re-engage in the reform discussion, that the ultimate objective should be to ensure that there is inclusive growth. Honourable members will be aware that on the sidelines of the meeting, informal ministerial meeting in Davos, there was the launch of a bilateral on e-commerce. South Africa is currently not has not joined that. That we understand that there will be a start of a process in March to discuss the approach to e-commerce amongst the 35 countries that have launched and the negotiation. Our approach to e-commerce is that the benefits of e-commerce, I think, are clear to everyone, including South Africa, and we see value in promoting e-commerce that supports inclusive development and growth. However, we can't ignore some of the challenges that are related to the digital divide. In South Africa, we also have the cost issues, not only related to the digital divide, but also including the cost of access to the internet, which is critical for e-commerce. So it would be important to look at